Moncrief on News Talk.
Jonathan Healy is on the phone now to explain the art of digging yourself out of a PR hole. I think the last thing you said that we heard properly was that old saw, if you're explaining, you're losing, Jonathan.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And again, apologising for poor technology is up there that you're explaining why something didn't work. No, you are in trouble. And when you're in trouble, don't make it worse. And that's what she did by releasing that photograph, because people will have inevitably examined that, past it to within an inch of its life. And had anything been wrong with it, it would perpetuate the crisis. So, you know, when you're in difficulty, your options are, do you say nothing in the hope that it peters out? Very rarely going to work, particularly if you're a member of the royal family. Can you deflate the crisis, or can you diffuse it? So the most obvious way to diffuse it will be to come out and say, this is what's wrong with me. This is why I was in hospital. Let's all move on together in a spirit of openness. Mm. That's not going to happen. But she could have deflated the crisis a little bit by saying, "Amn't I looking fine now? Here I am in a picture." That's what they were trying to do, but they got caught. And when you're operating at that high level, you're going to get caught, unfortunately.
Yeah. Of course, the thing is now, the problem is where everyone's speculating into a void, and that we actually don't know what the issue is, whether it's she's just recovering from a surgery or something else has happened to her.
Yeah, and you feel sorry for her to a certain degree, because, you know, the speculation has been ridiculous. I mean, up to, as you pointed out, she is dead, she has been kidnapped. All of these crazy conspiracy theories that are being fueled by social media, she's probably quite well insulated against that, but the wider House of Windsor would be aware that this is potentially damaging the brand. But you have to ask yourself, well, what is the reason why she's not putting this information out there? We know it's not cancer. We know it was abdominal surgery, but there are very few circumstances shown where the public will just buy that as an excuse with a high profile individual, particularly one that has courted the media in many ways cleverly since she came to the public eye. And when you see the front pages of the Daily Mail, which would be a terribly royal newspaper, questioning the logic and the rationale behind not saying what's wrong, then you have to wonder, you know, they are playing a very dangerous game here, that one of these days someone will leak information into the public domain who may already know what's wrong with Kate Middleton without her consent. And once that is out there, all bets are off.
Yeah. I mean, to a certain extent, from a PR point of view, especially if you're a member of the royal family, are you in a kind of a you can't really win situation? You're just mitigating damage all the time.
Well, whether you're a member of the royal family or a corporation or anybody who is facing the public, honesty is your best defense. And if you are honest about what is going on, it's unlikely to come back and bite you. And there are so many examples of this over time, where what happens is half-truths came out, or you decided to stall and delay, and perhaps what you could have done is use that time better to soften the ground ahead of what would be ultimately an announcement that would come out negatively against you. I mean, what people tend to do is rely on their own judgment and not the judgment of others. But when you're in the middle of a crisis, you are very ill-equipped to justify yourself.
Yeah.
Because ultimately what's happening to you is unique and personal to you. And you need someone around you to say, I know this is what you want, but really this is actually what you need.
Yeah. Now, we do have some examples of this. And this is an example, I suppose, of turning it about. And this was when Diana died, and the Queen wasn't in a rush to say anything about it.
No one who knew Diana will ever forget her. Millions of others who never met her, but felt they knew her, will remember her. I, for one, believe there are lessons to be drawn from her life and from the extraordinary and moving reaction to her death. I share in your determination to cherish her memory. This is also an opportunity for me, on behalf of my family, and especially Prince Charles and William and Harry, to thank all of you who have brought flowers, sent messages, and paid your respects in so many ways to a remarkable person. These acts of kindness have been a huge source of help and comfort.
Now, to explain the kind of backstory to that, Jonathan, she had been a bit slow in making a statement, and that had built up some speculation there.
What was happening was she was in Balmoral with the rest of the family as they had been digesting all of this. And in the meantime, the public mood had completely changed. And what was the genesis of all of this was the refusal of the royal family to fly the royal standard at half mast over Buckingham Palace. And the palace had said, no, that can only happen if the monarch is in residence. And they were very much sticking to this. They stayed up in Balmoral. They didn't issue a public statement. And Tony Blair, of all people, stepped into the breach and became the voice of the people in that circumstance, referring to Diana as the people's princess. To her dying day, Queen Elizabeth said that Tony Blair was her least favourite of all the prime ministers, and she had many of them. And I often wonder how much of it was to do with the death of Diana and the unenviable position they put themselves in. I mean, there is something somewhat unique about the royal family that they see themselves as above a lot of this chitter chatter. And I'm presuming that is centuries of build-up over time. Whereas in reality, the biggest threat to the British monarchy came with the death of Diana. And had the Queen not followed the advice of the likes of Tony Blair and others to come out and make that public statement on her return to London, you'd question whether the royal family and indeed her legacy would have been somewhat tarnished by that.
Yeah, but it seemed as if when she did make that speech, that the public rallied round her again.
Mm. Well, that's a classic example of deflation. So what was there was the crisis was there. The hot air had entered the balloon and it was heading towards the stratosphere. If you can take the air out of that balloon, it comes back down. And it's very simple. You just offer at any statement is better than no statement. Silence is the enemy when you are in a crisis. And I always use the example years ago of a factory that was closing in the Midlands. And what happened was a union meeting had been called the previous evening. The media got hold of it. There was this big kind of pressure on the organisation. Oh, you're calling them to a meeting. Oh, the jobs are gone. The jobs are gone. It's a disaster. And the following morning, that was continuing. But the journalists were all gathered outside the factory trying to speak to people coming in. And someone from a PR agency came down with a sheet of paper saying the company is meeting with staff and a further statement will issue. And that then changed the tone of the conversation from this fever pitch about the factory is closing to staff are now meeting with management and a further statement is expected later. And it's just about, giving as much as you can within the time frame that you have to deflate what otherwise would be a fever pitch conversation.
Yeah. Now, we also have an example of an absolute catastrophe. This is Gerald Ratner speaking about his own company and the fabulous jewellery type products that they make. This was a speech he made to the Institute of Directors in 1991.
We also do this nice sherry decanter. It's cut glass and it comes complete with six glasses on a silver-plated tray that your butler could bring you in and serve you drinks on. And it's really only cost £4.95. People say to me, how can you sell this for such a low price? I say, because it's total crap. We even sell a pair of earrings for under £1. Gold earrings as well. And some people say, well, that's cheaper than a prawn sandwich from Marks and Spencer's. But I have to say, the sandwich will probably last longer than the earrings. But anyway.
I'd say it was great crack to be at that speech.
Sounded like it was fun, wasn't it? I mean, it actually gave rise to a phrase, doing a Ratner, which is when you go out and say something so catastrophically bad, you destroy your company.
And how much damage did it do to the company?
The value of the Ratner Group, which wasn't just the Ratner's chain, there was others in the chain as well, other brands that were right around the world. The value plummeted by £500 million. Now, bear in mind, this was 1991, so £500 million was worth more back then, still an eye-watering amount of money. And it nearly resulted in the group's collapse until he brought in others around him who were perceived not to see the products that they were selling as crap and go on. And it's a classic example of when you have the weight of responsibility around your shoulders, you have to be careful about what you say. Because what Ratner was really saying there, he was saying the quiet bit out loud. He was saying the thing that they would say to themselves in a shareholders meeting, going, look at the wonderful profit margins that we have. But when Mrs. Whatever was going in to buy the decanter, she felt like she was as posh as the Queen. And he just removed all of that illusion and nearly cost the entire business. It's still going, by the way. They rebranded and part of the group is H. Samuels, which is still around today.
Yeah, and what happened to Ratner himself?
Well, he went on to lead a much quieter life, as you might imagine, after that. I think he married again, which is nice.
Ah, that's nice. And probably didn't have time to give any more interviews to anyone. Also, an example in a very similar vein. This is after the explosion on the Deepwater Horizon oil rig, which you may remember. There was an explosion on it in 2010, which led to a great loss of life. And Tony Hayward was at the time, I think, the managing director of BP, British Petroleum, or the CEO of British Petroleum, I should say, and was obviously asked for a reaction.
We're sorry, actually. We're sorry for the massive disruption it's caused to their lives. And, you know, there's no one who wants this thing over more than I do. You know, I'd like my life back.
So it was all about him, really.
He was doing so well, Sean. I mean, yeah. He'd got the apology out. We're very sorry. This has caused huge disruption, but effectively, it's interrupted my life. I mean, I can't even have a round of golf without thinking about this thing. And you know, bear in mind, as you pointed out, there was a loss of life here. So there was 11 people had actually died in the explosion. There were millions of gallons of oil leaking from the ocean floor. If people can remember back as far as 2010, they had to design something to go down and cap the oil well on the surface. People's livelihoods were being ruined. It's a classic example of someone being totally tone deaf and not having that conversation with someone beforehand before they ended up speaking to the media. I mean, I used to love, as a reporter back in the day, going out and you catch someone like this. And not that we'd go out and do it deliberately, because that's not how reporters work. But they, in the middle of a disaster, they'll say something that makes it worse. And that, as a reporter, is a good thing, because that means that you have a new story. So it really shows you that you have to be so careful when you're in the middle of a crisis that you don't do something that ultimately puts more light upon you when you're trying to turn it down.
Yeah. But then again, you know, sometimes like that Ratner comment, it just reveals who they really are.
Yeah,
really.
Absolutely. Yeah, and again, you choose your CEOs wisely, because when you're in a situation like that, and the person ultimately responsible for either getting you into the crisis or getting you out of that crisis is someone you have to trust. And it's someone who is there that they will be a safe pair of hands as you manage that crisis through. And, you know, someone who ultimately may not survive in the role, but who's not going to make a bad situation that little bit worse by something they say, like, our jewellery is crap, or indeed, it is interrupting my life, this terrible oil spill.
Yeah. And one of our listeners, Richard the Thatcher, says he thinks he spotted Kate Middleton in Lidl in Bantry yesterday.
It's a high likelihood. I mean, she could be there as well as anywhere. I mean, good choice to come to Cork, Kate. That's what I say.
That's what I thought, just to be close to you. Jonathan, thanks a million as ever. Jonathan Healy there. A few more comments on that. Sam Martin says, I think Ratner worked out quite well, I think. Made millions from another company. One texter, and actually in fairness, a fair few people are saying it's the press and social media that's the problem. Not all of us have the magnifying glass out. You are totally harassing that poor woman. Get a life. well, no, of course, not everyone's particularly thinking about that. But social media is just like ordinary people. You know, it's not like some separate company with a policy. It's just people who have collected together. But even if there wasn't social media, when there's an absence of information, people start to speculate. It's a fairly normal human reaction. Someone else says, I just can't understand why they're not just put a pin in this. The Royal Family Press Office seem to be making the situation ever worse. Plenty of people airbrush their photos, says John, sometimes to extraordinary levels. It's her own business. I don't understand why people think this makes it look like something more is wrong. Well, it was because, again, there was a lot of analysis of a news agency put it out, and they would have rules about how much you're allowed to alter photographs. And then after a few hours, now I assume someone got back to them and said, look, we think this is altered. They put what's known as a kill notice on it, meaning we've sent it out to kind of newspapers and the like around the world. Please don't use it. We're not standing over this photograph. anymore. And since then, people have been able to analyse what camera it was taken on, how many potential alterations were made to it. And it seems like that could be somewhere between 10 and 20 alterations, which is kind of odd. Another texter says the British media loved Meghan at the start, then they turned at her. Now the same thing is happening with the Princess of Wales. They won't be happy until Kate is turned back into a commoner by being kicked out of the royal family by divorce from William. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if this is, it's an odd thing that they issued a press release where it was Kate herself saying she was at home playing on her laptop, altering that photo, which beggars belief, really. I don't know if even the, you know, the most rabid of the tabloids are out to get her, other than there's a mystery there and they want to figure out what it is. Aideen says, I always think if I was famous and I was in the middle of a controversy, I'd just shut my mouth and say nothing. If you notice when people release a statement, social media just picks it apart. You can never get it right. No, well, absolutely. It's at that point, the damage is done. And then there's a certain amount of damage limitation. But as Jonathan says, it's probably the best policy to adopt is just say, put your hands up and say, yep, I did that thing. Well, as long as it's not something you're going to be sent to prison for, you mightn't be too inclined to say that in the public domain. But usually it's best to be as honest as you possibly can.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.